Hey guys, welcome back to the Breakout Room podcast. I'm Z, your host. Today, I want to talk about this very special book I just read. First, I want to thank a good friend of mine, Kent Kobay. That's his Instagram handle, by the way, who gave me the idea to talk about this book in my podcast. I want to share this with you all, even though it's something very personal for me, in my quest to understand how to sustain desire in long-term relationships. And I bet your ass none of your friends would ever be recommending this book to you, simply because, number one, your friends may not know that you need the help, or number two, you yourself don't even know that you need this. So here it is. What I Learned from Mating in Captivity by Esther Perel. I picked up Esther Perel's Mating in Captivity after watching her TED Talk about how to sustain desire in long-term relationships, which was pretty interesting. Perel is a psychotherapist with more than 20 years of experience with couples, particularly that of the sexless marriage. So here are some of the useful and interesting things that I learned from Perel's book. Number one, humans are contradictory. Oh boy, we are. We crave both the stability and familiarity of a long-term relationship, and we also crave novelty, thrill, and excitement. So we go to our partners and we tell them, give me belonging, give me identity, give me stability, but also give me transcendence, mystery, and awe all in one. We think it's a given and that toys and lingerie are going to save us from that. These tensions exist in individuals and in couples. You can't choose one over the other. The system needs both to survive. Knowing this, can we really have our cake and eat it too? The second one is, it answers that question. It says, yes, but to do that, we must avoid having too much intimacy with our partners, meaning that we should strive to be separate, independent people. We should be doing this anyway, but it's very easy to lose oneself in a relationship. Broadly, this can translate to the phrase, have a life. Because in desire, she says, we want an other, somebody on the other side that we can go visit, that we can spend some time with. In desire, we need a bridge to cross. And she quotes, where there is nothing left to hide, there is nothing left to seek. Which brings me to the third idea, which is that seduction and eroticism rely on mystery and the unknown. So she went to over 20 countries to ask this question. She asked, when do you find yourself most drawn to your partner? And a few answers kept coming back from the group of people that she's asked. One of the answers, most famous one, is that I am most drawn to my partner when she's away, when we're apart, when we reunite. Basically, when I get back in touch with my ability to imagine myself with my partner, and when I can root it in absence and in longing. And the second most popular answer is, I am most drawn to my partner when I see him in the studio, when he's on stage, when he's in his element, when she's doing something she's passionate about, when I see him at a party and other people are really drawn to him. So basically, when I look at my partner radiant and confident is the biggest turn on across the board. It's when I look at my partner at a safe distance, where this person who is already so familiar, so known, is momentarily once again somewhat mysterious and elusive. As Proust would say, mystery is not about traveling to new places, but it's about looking with new eyes. Now, to that effect, we should never forget that we don't own our partners. A lot of people don't get this, but even after years or decades together, we can never entirely know all there is to know about our partners, how they will react, what they think, or even what they want. And we should learn to accept that. Our partners are most desirable to us when we can see them in new light. You know, how charming they are at parties, how entranced they seem when they do something that they love, how alluring they are when they are in their element. So to stoke the fires of desire, we should strive to see them with new eyes whenever possible. And the fourth one is, fantasies are like dreams, not to be taken at face value, and certainly not to be judged. So I have wasted many hours analyzing my fantasies, wondering what they meant, and questioning my identity when they didn't align with my belief systems or, God forbid, my religion. So it was refreshing to hear Perel's interpretation. She says, like dreams and works of art, fantasies are far more than what they appear to be on the surface. They're complex psychic creations whose symbolic content mustn't be translated to literal intent. So an erotic fantasy isn't like a daydream after all. Perel uses the example of wanting to go on a vacation to Tahiti. So there's a pretty good chance you actually want to go to Tahiti if you're daydreaming about it. With sexual fantasies, though, it's best not to judge them literally. For one, because judgment and criticism are huge boner killers. And for two, what we fantasize about doesn't necessarily translate to what we actually want. Meaning, just because you get off while thinking about being hogtied by a bunch of cowboys doesn't mean you want to act that out in reality. It might mean that you get off on submission, on losing control, or on vulnerability. The cowboys are just a prop in the theater of your mind, she says. Number five, the myth of spontaneity. So culturally, we talk about how good sex is spontaneous. You know, how it's spur of the moment and it's like, it just happened kind of deal. But Perel argues that sex in a long-term relationship must be intentional. This doesn't mean putting an eggplant emoji in your Google calendar on Thursdays at 10 p.m. each week necessarily, but that you do need to have a plan. Otherwise, life gets in the way. In other words, if sex is a priority, then make it a priority. Good sex requires selfishness. That's number six. She says, erotic intimacy is an act of generosity and self-centeredness, of giving and taking. We need to be able to enter the body or the erotic space of another without the terror that we will be swallowed and lose ourselves. At the same time, we need to be able to enter inside ourselves to surrender to self-absorption while in the other's presence, believing that the other will still be there when we return, that he or she won't feel rejected by our momentary absence. I know that's quite long. So it means, you know, a lot of women, myself included, feel burdened by the need to be givers, to focus on not our own pleasure, but the pleasure of our lovers. Sometimes to the extent that we often don't even know what gives us pleasure in the first place. And yet, it's hard to ask for what you want, let alone take it. So it's important to remember that a little selfishness can go a long way. So we need to figure out what we really want and what our bodies want. Number seven, define the nature of your relationship on your own terms. So this kind of blew my mind. Perel says, we would rather kill a relationship than question its structure. We should start thinking about this in our own relationships. You know, we should start asking questions like, what beliefs do you have about relationships that aren't necessarily true? Are you just blindly following the dominant sexual or social model that's because it's the norm? What does an ideal relationship look like for you? The book doesn't have answers to these questions, but sometimes it's startling to think about how much we do because, well, just because other people have told us that's just how things are. Number eight, Stay curious. She says, when we resist the urge to control, when we keep ourselves open, we preserve the possibility of discovery. Desire resides in the ambiguous space between anxiety and fascination. Jeanette Winterson says something similar about passion in, unsurprisingly, The Passion. She says, somewhere between fear and sex is passion. I like the idea of desire existing in the liminal space between negative emotions and positive ones. Number 9, eroticism is a kind of intelligence. She says, it is an intelligence that celebrates ritual and play, the power of the imagination and our infinite fascination with what is hidden, illicit, and suggestive. And like a muscle, it needs to be cultivated and tended to. So when was the last time you allowed yourself to be truly playful? In sex and in life? You know, we need to start asking ourselves this question. I took this as a reminder that life is an adventure, not a burden. And last but not least, what couples who want to maintain desire for each other should aim for. So she says, love is a vessel that contains both security and adventure, and commitment offers one of the great luxuries of life. Time. Marriage is not the end of the romance. It should be the beginning. They know that they have years in which to deepen their relationship, their connection, to experiment, to regress, and even to fail. And that's about caps it for the 10 things that I've learned from Perel's book. All right. So I also want to talk about this movie Newness and how it's relevant to the entire conversation, because Perel herself was a guest. She was a guest actor in the movie. So she appeared in the movie as herself, giving a small talk about her book in a certain library. And she said some really interesting things, which stuck on my mind. So this is one of them. She said, the sacred cow of the romantic ideal is monogamy. And the idea itself that it could be negotiated means that there's something missing. The conversation about infidelity and the conversation about open relationships is not the same, because the essence of infidelity is secret. While the concept of an open relationship is that your explorations with others are not secret. So this basically means that you need to be honest with each other. You need to be honest with your partners in terms of what you really need in the relationship, what you really want in that relationship. And that notion that when I go to look for someone else, it's not always because I want to get away from you. It's because I want to get away from the person that I've become. It's not that I want to find somebody else, but I want to find another self, she says. It's at the core of a lot of affairs. There are a lot of people who are trying to basically reconcile two sets of values, two fundamental sets of human needs, which is to have one relationship in which, with you, I can have the anchor and the waves. I can have the stability and security, but I can also have the freedom and the autonomy. And this improbable marriage between the feeling of belonging and the feeling of freedom with one person is the great challenge of modern love. And then there was this one couple, who went up to her and said that, thanks so much, we really love your book, and we're actually trying to do the same thing. We're trying to practice open relationships, an open type of relationship. So she says, just so we're clear, I'm not recommending it, but that doesn't mean it's not valid. So if you think of it as the thing that doesn't kill us but make us stronger, then yes, go ahead. But I really want you to imagine it less as a destination and more as a layover, she says. So, all right, that's it for Esther Perel's Desire Wisdom. I hope you all learned a few things there. Again, her book is called Mating in Captivity. If you want to grab a copy of that, I believe you can pre-order from Fully Booked, or just download yourselves a free PDF of it on oceanofpdf.com. This has been the Breakout Room Podcast. See you in the next episode.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.